provide some topics, but choose whatever you want. Just do something that it's not covered in the course. And of course, it will be preferable if it's recent. So I'll do a poll, and we'll probably have a presentation by you guys on the sixth tutorial. And you might submit some one page, three quarter of a page of summary, and I'll read through it. If I don't understand, well, you'll have to explain to me. So try to make it as pedagogical as possible. It doesn't matter if you didn't summarize, see, though you know the entire field, what it's doing. That's not what you're supposed to do with the homework. Okay, so let's start it. We have talked about structure formation. So today's plan is continue with structure formation. And the first part, first half, we're going to try to make a prediction. All in cosmology, we call it a post-diction, because we can't predict anything. We're just observing what have already happened. We're going to make a post-diction and ask, well, at least we should, you know, do some, we have done this calculation, we should be able to answer some questions. So the one question we want to ask is, how big is the large structure? So let's make it like how, in terms of the weight or mass. Let's say mass. Okay, let's say how massive. So we're going to say some things is going to collapse, and then we wonder how massive it will be. And then we'll discover something very interesting. Okay, no spoiler. The second half is still same thing, but we're going to talk about something called the power spectrum. Spectrum means it depends on K, the wave number. Power just means, you know, power. It's more like a two-point function, but we'll get there. So power, this thing will be important throughout the structure formation. But let's recap what we have learned since we started last Friday and the Friday tutorial, which is a very cute tutorial. And we learned something to understand. So you might have heard about the density fluctuations only grow appreciably during the matter domination era. And they grow linearly. And then now you know why it grows in linearly in A, because you solved some differential equations on Friday. It's not the hardest differential equations to solve. So what do we have learned so far? What we have learned so far is the first thing we realize, if we make some ridiculous assumptions, that what we realize is that for a chunk of mass, it has a dynamical time that it will just collapse. And the air around us this time is 8 hours. So according to this calculation, in a few days, all the air around us will just grow, the density fluctuation grew, and they collapse into air balls. And if you're not near one of them, too bad. So we say, well, this is crazy. But if you take into account of pressure that will gradually build up, it takes some time for pressure to build up. But if it build up fast enough, it will counteract this. And the time scale for the pressure to build up is how long, how far away the pressure needs to travel, and divided by speed of sound, which I don't know if you checked out, but the answer is square root of W, which is our equation of state. So this officially is given by dP d rho to the power 1. Okay. So what comes out of this is that if you want things to collapse, which is called a structure formation, then you want this to be bigger than the collapsing time. So the pressure doesn't have enough time to build up. And thus, you can do some better calculation, but the upshot is that at a gene's length is where it is separate things. If you're larger than gene's length, you can collapse. If you are smaller, then pressure builds up. You just make some waves, sound waves. So about the air, if you're curious, if you calculate a gene's length, well, you know sound of speed of sound in air times 8 hours, it happens to be 10 to the 5 kilometers. And you were like, okay, the entire Earth is not big enough for them to collapse. And hence, we observed they didn't collapse. Okay, so this is what we learned on Friday. And in the tutorial, what we have considered is our universe expanding. And that introduced another scale. Which is 1/Hubble, this is defined to be. And then this has some interesting numerical factor with that dynamical scale. Okay, so then what we realized, the first thing we realized in the tutorial is this is pretty much close to one, so we can't just ignore one of the effect and carry on, so we should take care of both events. So what we have found then, well, then there is some GR result, is that you find the equation of motion governing this small fluctuations is given by this equation, which the most important term is where Hubble comes in, says, okay, the universe expanding act as a friction term that slows our density fluctuation growth. And the most important lay is the result, is that if we have density fluctuation bigger than Gene's length and smaller than Hubble, then we have the following result, says if it's radiation dominated, then it grows like log n. And matter dominated, it grows linear with A. And dark energy dominated, well, it doesn't really grow, it's a constant. You might wonder that if you grow with log A, but if you can go all the way back to A0, isn't this growing a lot? But you actually can't go back that far, because when you go back far, the universe becomes really hot. We're going to study the hot mess. It's really a hot mess of the universe tomorrow. But if it grows hotter and hotter, then everything becomes radiation. Which is good too, but then this thing is defined to be what we want is the fluctuation of the matter. But if everything is radiation, there is nothing to fluctuate to talk about. And that time scale, say, you can give them by 1 GeV, which is proton mass, which is not that big. This thing is like 10 or 20 something. So it's not going to be compatible with the linear growth of the expansion, as we will see, or rather, I'll give you a number. But this, during the era that it grows with A, the baryonic matter grows by a factor of about 1,000. So this is what we have learned so far. And now let me ask the question, is that how heavy or how massive is the large structure? So if we're asking about mass, so this is called a Gene's mass, of course, it's calculated by this Gene's length give you a ball, And then you just use the mass density, biomolecular density in that ball, then you can calculate the mass. So today we'll take an approach as in our first tutorial. We'll pretend we're ignorant. We are at the time when people calculate this. So, you know, you just look around the world, there are stars, galaxies, they're called bionic matter. Then there's photons, they're called radiation. I don't know what else is there. I don't always just assume mysterious creatures like dragons, they exist. So in our mind is that there is bionic matter and there's radiation. Don't worry about the neutrinos too much, because throughout your entire homework too, which we posted today, you will worry about the neutrinos. So this is what we're going to look at. And basically, there is a phase transition. So there is baryons. Okay, let's just write proton, neutron, electrons, positron, whatever. And there is photons. So at when the universe is really hot, they're just in the big soup. They're all in thermal equilibrium of each other. And at some point, something called a photon decoupling happened. So the photon decoupled from the soup, and you have two soup. There is the photon soup, and there is bionic soup. That's the definition called a photon decoupling. And we will study very carefully about this, because that's the CMB we saw. Photon decouple, they just free stream the universe we saw today. That's the cosmic macro background. And today, the only thing important, we know that it happens at around the z equals 1100. So that's the redshift. So basically, when the universe is about 1,000 smaller than now, the photon decouples. And we will come back to justify this number. It takes a few steps, so we'll justify it later. So this is why it happens before we can consider that all of these things make a soup. And in this soup, if you calculate, actually you found the photon's density is bigger than the bionic matter. So photon actually dominates in this soup. So in this soup, we can attempt to calculate this gene's mass. So Rj is equals to 2 pi square root of 1/3, which is the equation of state for the photons, and times the, we'll express the T dynamical in terms Hubble parameter, because this thing we can get out of the Friedmann equation. So if you know when this happens, just before then, we can look at this thing and do some calculation. And if you have AT as a function of T, which we should, at least we have a differential equation, and then you can just evolve it. And you can plug in and put this H in, and the rho bionic, if we know what's rho bionic today, which we know, it's about 5% of the critical density. Okay, we'll justify this in Wednesday's tutorial. So there are things that I can't justify yet, but we'll see. This is on Wednesday lecture. This is in Wednesday tutorial. Is that why do we believe, like what measurements gave us that this belief? And but this is something we can measure today. And of course, you can go back by 1,000 to 3 to find what's the baryonic at the time of decoupling. And if you plug in all these numbers, which you can do it, but I wouldn't do it on the board, you predict that the mass of this whole thing should be 10 to the 19th solar mass. And people know about galaxies are frowning at me because we know the largest supercluster is about 10 to the 17th solar mass. But that's what it is. It says that basically our calculation says if you have mass or radius anywhere smaller than this, then it's not going to grow because it's smaller than the gene's length. You have to be, basically small. If you have any structure smaller than this, pressure will build up. You have some oscillations, but you wouldn't grow. Of course, there is something weird here, because this is basically the size of the observable universe at that time. And this number is about 3. It's putting in a calculator, I'll do whatever assumption that you want, but it's 3. It's like you cancel pi with 3. Anyway, so the gene's length there is actually bigger than the observed universe at that point, which is kind of weird. You require the fluctuations to be bigger than the entire observed universe at that point. Those fluctuations has no causal connection. But even that, you have to achieve the whole, that much mass of the baryonic matter to be able to collapse. So they don't. The idea of the calculation is they didn't before photon decouple. Because as long as photon is coupled to the soup, photon is just bouncing around, making everything equilibrium, this thermodynamics such that the sound speed is really fast. And then, so just a comparison, this is a pretty big supercluster. It's this heavy. Okay, so now we can do the same thing just after. What happened just after? Well, just after, photon decoupled. So we don't care about the photons anymore. These are two separate soup. They happen to coexist in universe, but whatever. There is a baryonic soup over here. So this is the only thing we care about. Well, actually, what is here now is actually hydrogen. That's why photon decoupled. Some helium. So it's the atom. It's not the nuclei. It's the atom. So that's because the universe become neutral. That's why the photon decoupled, because photon couples to the charges. So what we're going to calculate is basically when the electrons get captured by nuclei and when that happens. Okay, just after we have some neutral atom, maybe there is a teeny bit of other things like lithium, but it's very teeny bit. That's a neutral atom soup. And basically you can ignore helium, it's 25% of the mass. If you count the numbers, it's largely dominated by hydrogen. We'll just say there is a hydrogen cloud, and then we figure out that we do the same calculation again. So that what happens is, of course, we should reevaluate our sound of speed because the equation of motion has changed. The equation of state has changed. So for a hydrogen soup, of course, the mass density is equals to m times the number density. And the pressure is given by the PV equals nRT thing. So this is nKBT, and which we always conveniently choose Boltzmann constant to be 1. So this is just nT. So our equation of state is given by nt over nm, which is t over m. When the temperature is much lower than the mass of the atom, of course, normally, usually, we take it to be zero. But when we talk about the pressure, we have to take this into account. That's all the reason why things didn't collapse. Because if you calculate this Jeans length, it's given by 2 pi times this thing. So you can't quite just take this factor to be zero. And the other thing is the same. Okay, so you wonder how big is this factor? This we can try to estimate, given that we assume the universe expanded by a factor of 1,000 since then. If the universe has expanded 1,000, which means the temperature used to be 1,000 higher. So there's a cute relationship says as universe expands, temperature drops. And this can be justified in various ways. The easiest way is there's something called a Wien's law. Says that the temperature is proportional to the Wien's law says that for a black body system, the wavelength, let's say the k, the wave number is proportional to temperature. And then this is 1 over lambda, and the lambda stretch as universe expands. And then you can also justify if you have ever integrated the Planck distribution, you realize that the total energy of a black body radiation is proportional to T to the force. It's called some Stefanik law. And there is a crazy factor in front of it. But we also know that the energy density decay as 1 over A to the 4. So there's all sorts of argument to justify that if you know the scale factor of the universe, you can just invert it to get the temperature of the universe. Yep.
When we say that the photons decouple from matter,
yeah,
is that just saying that the atoms are now much smaller than the average wavelength of the photon, basically, or?
It's just saying photon interact with electrons. Like they have to have a charge. And if all the electrons are captured in the atom, it just doesn't have anything to interact with. It's just the electron density of the universe is so low that for photon to find one to interact, it takes the whole life of the universe to find one. So we'll try to do that a little bit more rigorously, but not completely. But we're actually trying to do. It's something weird though. It's called a recombination, but they never combined before. But everybody calls recombination. It's the first time ever the electrons are combined with a nuclei to form an atom. And we're gonna start that era a little bit better than this. I haven't done anything. I just say that happens at that time. And that time is when universe is 1,000 times smaller and the temperature is 1,000 times higher. And we know today's temperature is about 3 Kelvin. So 1,000 higher is about 3,000 Kelvin. So this is when photon decouple happens, roughly. I might be off by some it might be four or two, but roughly 3,000 kelvin. And here is an interesting dictionary, is that one kelvin is about 10 to the minus 4 electron volts. That's just how big a Boltzmann constant is. So you convert one kelvin into some joules, and then you can convert joules into electron volts. That's where you get the 10 to the minus 4. It's just the Boltzmann constant has 10 to the minus 23 there, and the electron charge has 10 to the 19, so that's where that number comes from. And then this is about 0.3 electron volts or 0.25. It doesn't matter. For our argument, we can take 0.3. And then the hydrogen is still what at 1 billion electron volts, 1 GeV. The proton and the neutron is all at 1 GeV. That's you just take the proton mass from the whatever, 1.6 times 10 to the minus 23, 27 kilograms something, and you convert it into GeV. That's how proton weighs. Actually, it's much, much easier just remember proton weighs 1 GeV and calculate all everybody else mass according to proton's mass. So that's what particle physicists do, is to measure everything, literally everything in GeV. But then this is something I can calculate. Well, since I don't really care about how big it is, how precisely it is, so it's easy for me to do some estimation. This might be 1.7 or 8 or whatever. Let's say 2, 3, 4, roughly the same. Okay? That's good, because this is the only difference between the before decoupling and after decoupling. The Hubble parameter is still the same, has nothing to do with photon decouple at all. And the only thing that changed, that the bionic density is still the same, they just decoupled. It's not like no bionic matter is created or destroyed in this phase transition. So that's the same. And this is the same. The only thing changed is this factor. So instead of being the sound speed before is this guy, and now the sound speed become that guy. And this is something like a 0.6. It doesn't matter. All these numbers, I did some crazy approximations, but you will say that the argument doesn't matter. So let's give some index. This is after, this is before. What I'm trying to say is that I can set up equations as 0.6. I need to multiply 0.6 by basically something like this to get this. So basically what I'm saying is the sound speed decreased by this factor. Because before it's just photons, it's square root 1/3, but now it's pressure provided by the bionic matter itself, which we know it's very close to zero, as shown there. So it plummets. So if the sound speed decreased by this huge factor, and it comes in the Jeans length, which is cubed because we want a volume, that just means that if I look at the Jeans mass, we need to multiply this by this factor cubed. So that's something like a 27. That doesn't matter. Let's say it's plummeted by this much. So before, we have 10 to the 19 solar mass. And now, afterwards, we're down to 10 to the 5 solar mass. So 10 to the 5 solar mass is like a dwarf galaxy. It's like a teeny galaxy. See, Milky Way has 10 to the 11 solar mass. So this is very crazy. It says that before photon decouples, anything smaller than the largest supercluster ever cannot grow. Immediately after photon decouple, okay, the only thing you can form is of the size of a dwarf galaxy. So where did the superclusters, all this large-scale structure, come from? What did we do? We must did something wrong, because we just want to get a rough idea how massive is the large structure, large scale structure, and we totally punted.
Did we get wrong the baryonic density, or?
Well, the baryonic density is like 5% of the critical density of the universe, give or take, the maximum is like, I don't know, 20%. You can get a factor of 4. You push it, you say everything is the baryonic density. You can push it, it says everything we have today is baryonic. You don't use that omega rho, you just use omega rho, the omega baryonic equals 1, which is wrong today. You get, you know, a factor of 20.
But you're still considering dark matter in there, right? In the baryonic.
Bro. See, that's the critical problem, is that we're saying that we didn't assume anything mysterious exist. Well, it seems that the large scale structure, the observation of the large scale structure that exists at the order of 10 to the 17 solar mass, seems to point it out that our assumption that the universe only contains baryonic matter and the photons might be wrong. So why would the dark matter help us? Because it doesn't care about the photons. If they ever care, so that's the only one. We don't really know much about this thing, but the thing we definitely know is this thing couldn't care less about the photons. Otherwise, they are not dark. It's indicated by this name. If it has anything to do with photons, we will already see it, then we wouldn't call it a dark matter. Okay, which means it doesn't care about a photon decoupling. It's already out of the soup. That soup, dark matter form their own soup. Over here. Let's make it a red circle, because it's the important component that we ignored at the beginning. So, if you consider dark matter as its own soup, then when would this? Well, so basically, when would dark matter's density fluctuation grow? That's what we calculated in our tutorial. It will start to grow as soon as matter dominates, because it doesn't grow, doesn't quite grow. It's a factor of 20, which is definitely not enough. So if we consider dark matter as a soup, then it grows as soon as matter radiation equality happens. When matter starts take over, which largely is made of dark matter. And this is the important time. So this is, we can actually calculate when it happens, because this today is 8 times 10 to the minus 5. This today is like a 0.3, so that's just the omega, r and omega n. And then we know how it behaves. Sure. You set it equal, you just divide the two numbers, you get something like 3,600. Give or take, and maybe you get 4,000 or 3,200. Actually, it sort of depends on when you open the cosmology book, if it's written before we know neutrino might have a mass or not. It affects a little bit, but it's about that much. So, sorry, Z. So basically, A is 1 over that much, because the universe is way smaller when radiation matter equality. So then, the idea is that, this is the sound wave of the fluctuations, densities. And if, so then let's pick some random point and call this photon decoupling. And then let's say pick this random point is radiation matter equality. Z, A, K. It's just a time scale. And it's completely off scale. But the rough idea is that if we have no dark matter, this is how the bionic matter will grow. And with dark matter, so this is how dark matter will grow. But the point is that it has all this time the dark matter already grow a little bit. So then they get sort of clumped together with self-gravity, so they can attract the bionic matter. So when bionic matter starts growing, instead of purely being governed by our equation up there, it actually sort of falls into the dark matter gravitational well, so it just quickly catch up. Well, kind of go backward in time. I'm very bad at drawing these parallel lines. Okay, sort of still parallel. But then when photon sees, well, the bionic matter sees dark matter, oh, it just catch up and then they grow together.
What do you mean? Is that curve still just baryonic density or?
So this is the bionic matter. So bionic matter basically doesn't grow much until photon decouples. And this is without the dark matter. We predict that it grows as linearly as this scale factor, suppose it's this curve. But if with dark matter, it basically, at the beginning, it just doesn't matter what it is supposed to grow, it just fall into, get attracted by the dark matter. So dark matter already forms some halos, it's some region are already heavier than the other region, so there's some gravitation attraction, but bionic matter just fall into that trap.
And is the leftmost curve, is that just the dark matter?
That's just the dark matter, sorry.
So in terms of this analysis we just did, are we saying the reason the baryonic matter catches up is because the dark matter is causing the gene's radius to shrink? Or?
So basically the dark matter causes the genes. Well, basically, dark matter will determine the gene's radius to be somewhere in between. Well, the thing is that a crucial point is that changed. The genes because instead of using that at decoupling, we are using that number at radiation matter equality. And this happens earlier than the decoupling. So it's just, it had a start. It started to grow much earlier. So it also, dark matter's density is also like, I don't know, a factor of five. But that's one reason. The other reason is it's just a much earlier time.
I'm confused. Why wouldn't the baryonic matter feel the effect of the dark matter collapse before decoupling? Why does it start feeling the dark?
Well, because this is a gravitational coupling. Mm-hmm. That's electromagnetic coupling, mm-hmm. and that's ten to the 42 times greater. So as long as they are coupled through electromagnetism, it's not going to feel the gravity.
Great.
So we see a first hint that this mysterious dark matter probably exists. Otherwise, the structure we observed is much, much bigger than what baryonic matter alone can form. And our analysis only apply up to dirt of order one. After that, you have to do numerical calculation that I haven't done. But according to the results, the numerical calculation says after, as soon as you reach dirt of order one, then you do a couple oscillation like that, but then you just start to collapse, to condense, and start to form stars, galaxies, and whatever. Okay. Next topic? Yep.
Sorry, one last question.
Yeah.
So, like, the dark matter and baryonic density, they were still growing before radiation matter equality, just much slower.
Yeah, it's radiation. Just by, like, so they at this point, they grow by, like, a factor of 20. And between decoupling and now, today, it grew about a factor of 1,000 because Z is equals to about 1,000. So you can sort of ignore what they grow before the radiation.
So the density is the over density.
Right.
So density is not a
density. Oh, so this is the... This is the fluctuation. Right?
It's over density, not density.
Huh?
It's over density, not density.
Yeah, this is the, sorry, true. Okay, this is, label my plot, fluctuation. Also, in our case, we only care about over density, because the under density would be the same. All right. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a reference on the wiki that if you want to know more about a structure formation, I find that some professor gave a talk at some summer school in La Cousse. He has some slides and has more information on this. Okay, now let's move on to talk about power spectrum. So basically, what we have, we're talking about a structure formation. And we can consider the large structure we observed. Okay, I'm terrible at drawing. Also, I claim it's winter. They look different. Okay, this is a very terrible drawing. But this is a tree. And this is what we observed today. And the inflation theory itself very well that it sees, they even use the same word, inhomogeneity. So this is the inflation period of time. They claim that we can produce this initial inhomogeneity that eventually will grow at the tree. And what we have just looked at is it's the sprout. which is at 1 meter dominance, that we studied if we have some sprouts, and as time evolves, they will grow like the linearly with the scale factor. And on Wednesday, we're gonna study a supling, which is the CMB. So, and what is this all in common is about the power spectrum. So basically, the power spectrum is something you can calculate out of inflation theory. And things get complicated, but there's some transfer function that is very complicated, but the people has implemented into programming package. Then they will start to calculate what's the power spectrum at this eventually evolve to CMB. And on CMB, you can just measure, use your telescope or satellite to measure this power spectrum, and then you can start to do comparison. Okay, so what is this thing? Well, first, we want to make some nice claim about this equation we write down last Friday. Is that you have a density fluctuation equation. Okay, so this equation is actually really nice equation. So first, what we'll claim is that now, before we are studying a ball, and within a ball, it's still homogeneous. But that's not necessarily true. When you form densely fluctuation, it can be any shape. And the good thing is this equation applies for any shape. It doesn't have to be a ball. And what we want to study, so if the fluctuation is still small, then the background geometry can still be written as the FLRW geometry of the universe. So what we can try to study is how is the density fluctuation depends on the co-moving coordinates. So different parts of the universe has different homogeneity. Then we can study this. And in order to study this, well, how do we study this? Well, how do we study anything that depends on some, you know, space? We Fourier transform them, right? That's what we do, is that now it doesn't depend on R anymore, it depends on K. Something e to the minus k to R, and then normalized and integrated over K, maybe there's 2 pi cube. But that's just what we do, is that we see something depends on space, but if we want to study it more carefully, we find each individual Fourier component and see what happens. The nice thing about this equation is that you can just add the k there, it will still obey. Okay, there is some subtlety, is that this the k is going to be complex. But it's okay. This thing basically obeys that, and the phase, when we can use our linear approximation, it doesn't really change. So we can still use this equation to study this, which is nice, and now we have something. So we have some Fourier component of this density fluctuations. So the nice thing about this equation applies separately to the wave number is that even if stars and the galaxies starts to form, so our condition to be able to use this equation is bigger than Jeans' length, smaller than Hubble's length. So even if as long as it fits this, we can study. So even if you have a small structure, so big K, small lambda, has collapsed, this equation is valid separately for each individual k, then we can still study the small k, large lambda. Those components, the large steel structure, is still described by this equation. Okay, so now finally the power spectrum is just defined by this thing square, averaged over the orientation of this k wave number. So the idea of this averaging, which you would say again in SAMB, that we always do this kind of averaging, is actually the initial idea that we are a typical observer in a typical galaxy, observing maybe a typical universe, maybe not. But the idea is that there might be some other observer observing the universe, then it sees some power spectrum, then we want to study the statistics. We want to average all the different observers in the universe, which is very hard to do. So instead, we average our observer, but around the different orientation of the wave number. So this, the idea behind this is we see some CMB, there are some cold spots, there are some hot spots. Where they are, that's not the interesting question, because we want to ask statistical questions rather than particularly unique to this observer. So we always do some sorts of average. And so we always compare this average, the thing, and in the after all this crazy things happens, and there is something measured here, and we are comparing statistical property. And this, so now there is some inflation input, which actually is sort of verified, is that to assume this field is actually Gaussian. So Gaussian field has a property that all the phi k are completely uncorrelated. So all the phases for the individual mode are uncorrelated. And of course, we can claim is a Gaussian. It literally means we can draw the delta out of a Gaussian distribution, which is given by that. And the sigma is, you know, it's the normalization of let me not write this, but it's a Gaussian distribution, and you can normalize it. It's a probability distribution. So it integrates to one. So you can calculate this, and this is actually basically verified to a large extent by Planck. So if your field is a non-Gaussian, then you have to go back to the inflation area, and you can predict some statistical property of three-point function instead of two. Because you know, if you have a Gaussian field, we calculated the two-point function, we're done. Everything, all correlation functions is described by the two-point function. And if a non-Gaussian, then you have some three-point function, the calculation is bizarrely complicated, but the people does that, and people say, and it's so bizarrely complicated and hard to extract from the data, so they can only say if your non-Gaussianity has this property, then you measure those numbers, then you can figure out if we have a non-Gaussianity or not. And the Planck says basically not. And Planck is like, well, Planck has many missions, but the ones I really care about is there gravitational waves produced by the inflation, and is there non-Gaussianity? Those are two big questions inflation people ask. And after many years, non-Gaussian light is not existing, and the gravitational wave is also not existing. But that just makes, I don't know how to put a measure on inflation theories, but roughly if there is no gravitational waves, then you cut half of the model away. Hopefully we'll get to that. I'll try. I'll do a lot of calculation skipping, but maybe we'll get there. So, but the point is, we always try to do this averaging. And the other thing is, what inflation theory gives you is that it's a power law. Actually, inflation says this power spectrum N is actually very close to be one. And this is very important, the approximate sign. This is one of the very important approximate sign, because N equals one is actually excluded by the data. So it's very important that it predicts something not one. I think the center value, I don't know, change it sometimes. At some point it's 0.96. It might be 98, 97. It's something like that. Okay. The question we want to ask today, though, because that's all the way until the end of the lecture, when we go back to the time that we almost cannot go back further. What the question we want to ask is, for example, what I care is this quantity, for example. I'm trying to predict, you know, supercluster masses. And we can ask the question is, what does this power spectrum say about the masses? Well, the masses is given by the same thing. It's my co-moving radius cube, and then some density. And let's ignore all this numeric factor, but the R is inverse proportion to K. Then I have 1 over k cube. Two pi over k. And then I have this. So I want to ask the question, which is m, the difference between m and average m, dirt m. And I want to ask the question, what is this? Okay, so what this thing, the top part is basically given by, gives by the power spectrum. And then there is a factor of k cube. So if you assume it's a power law spectrum, we have k to the n plus 3.
Sorry?
Yep.
Where did the power spectrum come in there?
But because power spectrum is the delta k, which is the density fluctuation square. And we have the mass fluctuation square. So it's certainly, proportional to the power. And then, so that is basically what's delta m. And then you just take the square root of k to the n plus 3, and you get a k to the n plus 3 over 2. Then you say, if n is smaller than minus 3, then that's a negative exponent. Then if k goes to 0, then it diverges. So that's not a good, because k to the zero limit is the large scale structure limit. And we assume large scale structure is homogeneous, diverge. is not good. And the other thing we can study is the gravitational potential . So this thing is delta M over M times M over R, but R is like square, take the cubic root of M. So this is delta M divided by M third. So this is K to the 2 N plus 3, and M is K to the minus 3, and that's K to the minus 1. So this is K to the N minus 1 over 2. And this is the thing says, if N is bigger than 1, then K, when K goes to infinity, which is a small distance, the gravitational potential will diverge. If N is smaller than 1, the large scale gravitational potential fluctuation will diverge. So if you want your gravitational potential to behave nicely, and the power strip spectrum really prefers N equals 1. Okay. So tomorrow, we're going to move backward in time and get to study the hot mass universe.